You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The NHL trade deadline is fast approaching. Friday, March 8th. And you're going to want to be following the SDPN because we have some excellent content lined up for you. No need to sit around in front of a TV all day. When a trade breaks, the SDP will be posting immediate reactions. Then after all the wheeling and dealing is done, stay tuned for our special SDP trade deadline review episode. And as always, the SDPN is where you need to be as the deadline approaches. The Chris Johnston Show is tapped into all of the latest rumblings, and Basu and Godin have all of your Montreal Canadiens updates. So tune in. Friday, March 8th, the NHL trade deadline is going to be a ton of fun, and the SDPN will be all over it. Follow us on socials, smash that subscribe button on YouTube, and get excited for some massive deals.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
A lot of names off the trade board, but a handful of them still remain ahead of Friday's NHL trade deadline. Let's get into it, Siege. I want to talk about Jake Guentzel. The Pittsburgh Penguins winger. He's still out there. Who's interested in him? Where could he go? Let's break him down first.
Yeah, well, fear not. I filed a new trade board Thursday morning, a refreshed one, and there's still lots of action to come. Of course, Jake Guentzel remaining in the number one slot. And, you know, his is an interesting situation. The Penguins were hoping to kind of force an early deadline to make a deal by Wednesday night involving Guentzel, I think, so that they could get on to other business. But that didn't happen. And I think part of the reason is there's some complexities to this trade. You've got a number of different teams involved to varying degrees. And you've even got one scenario I've been told where if Guentzel were to be traded, Pittsburgh would actually have to trade Riley Smith first off its roster in order to create enough cap room to retain 50% on Guentzel and accommodate whatever they're taking back. And so, you know, I think from the Pittsburgh end of things, they're juggling a lot of balls with Guentzel. The teams we know that have interest is Vancouver is still there. You know, it's tough to rank them, but I would, as of this moment, and information changes quickly at this time of year, I would say the Canucks to me are the most likely landing spot, but certainly not the only one. You have the Vegas Golden Knights that I think have maintained some interest in Guentzel and have you know, made some other significant transactions, but left themselves in a position where they can get in on big action still. The Carolina Hurricanes, the New York Rangers have been around this file. I think there's probably a couple other teams we don't know of. I always wonder about Tampa. It's you know, scary, quiet in Tampa, and we know it's in Julien Brisebois' DNA to make a big swing at the deadline. You know, he was in on Noah Hanifin before he ended up in Vegas on Wednesday night, and so you wonder about the Lightning. But, you know, that's kind of where we're at with Guentzel. And obviously this is a big trade for Pittsburgh. This is truly the first selling deal that this organization has made in what, 15, 16, 17 years, whatever it is. You were a wee boy, young Julian, when last the Penguins were considering them sellers at the deadline. I can say that with confidence. And so, you know, this is an attractive piece. It's a big deal. And, you know, we'll just have to see where it ends up. But the good news is I do think there's still a strong amount of interest for Guentzel, but you know, some of those teams I mentioned, a team like Carolina, you know, probably isn't coming in with a traditional package. I think they're looking to deal prospects. You know, I think everyone's waiting around for almost price discovery here to see, you know, is this going to soften? Is maybe the ask that the Penguins have put out there? And I think, you know, what the Penguins have looked at is some of the big deals involving, you know, rental wingers in the past number of years. I look at the Timo Meier deal last year from San Jose to New Jersey, you know, Claude Giroux a couple of deadlines ago when he went from Philly to Florida. You know, Bo Horvat last year wasn't a deadline deal, but a January deal that saw him go to the Islanders from Vancouver. And the Canucks got back, what, a first round pick, a player, and Anthony Beauvillier for their roster, and then also a prospect. And so, you know, this is going to be a multi-tiered package. And I think that there's a lot of complexities to it. And really, you know, Kyle Dubas now, in my view, is controlling probably the most attractive forward, although maybe we'll put an asterisk on Tyler Toffoli, you know, because I do believe the Devils now are in a position where they're not just listening on him and they really are seriously considering dealing him by Friday. And then you have some sort of secondary options, you know, Jason Zucker, Max Pacioretty, a number of other forwards. But I mean, we're really talking of Guentzel being the cream of this crop and a big move for Kyle Dubas to have to pull off here in Pittsburgh. A lot of pressure.
Yeah, a lot of pressure, and I'm sure he's going to want all the assets that he would want for a player like Jake Guentzel. With respect to the New Jersey Devils, who I think are really interesting in all of this, Kyle Dubas and the Pittsburgh Penguins, that spotlight has now been placed firmly on them. You mentioned a handful of teams that are interested in Jake Guentzel, the Canucks being one of them, but I really want to focus on Vegas for a second, because this is a team that just got Anthony Mantha, they just got Noah Hanifin. They still have their first-round pick this year and next year, and they could still accommodate Jake Guentzel. Like, this is – I could hear the fans banging on their proverbial windows and glasses being like, how do they keep doing this?
Do you know what Vegas does? I mean, everyone has the obvious observation. They're an aggressive organization. They've signed big-name free agents. They've made a number of big trades in the last 6-7 years of their existence. But what they always have done, in my view, that's maybe underappreciated – is really identify talent well and manage the salary cap well. And, you know, I know there was a couple of years ago, they ran into cap trouble and they played a bunch of games with like 16 skaters because they, you know, they couldn't dress a full lineup with injury situations and the like, but you know, they really navigate the system that is in place right now in with the NHL CBA at an elite level. And, you know, they got Anthony Mantha without giving up a first round pick and they got 50% retained. They got Noah Hanifin at 75% retained. And yes, they gave up a first round pick there. But as you mentioned, with the conditions at play, it might not end up being till 2026. And so what that has done, those two transactions, has left them with enough cap space to make another decent size addition. And they have their 2024 and 2025 pick, at least until Saturday. If they don't trade that 2025 pick by Saturday, it does get transferred to the Flames in the Hanifin deal. But I mean, that's elite management of your assets, of your cap. And, you know, obviously I see a lot of debate about the, you know, how they're using the long-term injured reserve provision under the CBA and squeezing players in. I mean, I personally think if you have a beef with that, you really just have a beef with a hard salary cap. The reality for me in a league like this is that injuries are always going to be a little bit gray. I mean, every hockey player right now is playing hockey in March that's been here. They're all degrees of injured, you know, in terms of not feeling fresh, you know, probably managing small situations every day. And then, of course, there are larger term injuries like, you know, the spleen injury that Mark Stone has, I don't think is actually up for a matter of debate. I don't think there's anything funny business going on there. Unfortunately, that's a significant injury that he suffered. You know, but I think as long as you have a hard cap system and the vagaries of injuries, I mean, I don't know how you ever make the rules perfect. To have that all accommodated. So if you're raging at this, and that's fine, that's your position. And certainly there's a number of front offices around the league, I will say, that are raging at not just the Vegas, but you know, whether it was Tampa a few years ago with Kucherov. I mean, this has been a consistent theme, it seems, at most deadlines. I think really you're raging at the machine. You're raging at what the NHL has put in place here. And so
great poll, by the way, with that raging against the machine.
Exactly.
Great,
I mean, if the league is going to have a triple hard cap, which it does with like no luxury tax or no sort of that's all, those are almost like exhaust elements, right? This kind of stuff's going to happen. So I actually sit back and I applaud Vegas, not just for being aggressive. Again, that's the obvious part to me. It's the way they're aggressive. Like they are incredibly well-run team. And, you know, that's obviously George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon get credit there. But, you know, I think also the other people that they're leaning on in their front office for cap expertise and the like. I mean, they are the absolute cream of the crop. And I love it. They're the Death Star right now. I mean, you're just like, here comes Vegas. And all these other teams are like, we can't pay these prices. And somehow Vegas keeps making big moves. And so I don't know if they have another one up their sleeve. You know, I don't know that they've committed internally. In fact, it's my impression they just want to be open in case something falls into place again. I mean, let's take Hanifin, for example, and I want to look ahead more than back, but you know, yeah, they were not in on Noah Hanifin on Tuesday. It not that they weren't in the sense that they weren't interested, but they weren't engaged in trade discussions, really meaningful trade discussions, because, you know, I think that there was certainly an industry feeling that Noah Hanifin wanted to go to the Southeast, that Tampa was the favorite, that was his desired destination. And then when nothing manifested in terms of a trade with the Lightning and Flames, there was Vegas just ready to pounce, in a position to make that deal. And of course they brought it together pretty quickly. I know there was a while for the trade call to happen from when the first report surfaced Wednesday night, but you know, they acted quickly, decisively, got the deal done, landed their man. And now we'll see if they can sign Noah Hanifin to an extension. I don't get the impression those talks have happened just yet, but you know, Vegas has a pretty good track record when it comes to those things too.
Man, that trade it on its own, and not just, I know we're going to try to go as ahead as we can, just, yeah, I think the Flames could have done a lot better with Noah Hanifin on that. And the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights, yes, there's that condition on the 2025 first, but they come out looking like winners. And the fact that, you know, they still could keep themselves open for a player like Jake Guentzel. I know some people don't like the winner and loser label at these types of events, whether it's trade deadline or free agency, but Vegas is looking like the front runner to be a winner at the trade deadline. If they find a way to come away with Jake Guentzel when it's all said and done, they might still end up winners with the haul that they've been able to get so far, with how little they've paid to get there. It's a team that's built to win, and they're doing everything they can to win, and they're using provisions that every team in the league can use. Whenever you go off and make that complaint about LTIR, remember, every team can and has used it to their advantage.
Yeah. I mean, not every team, because some teams never spend to the cap, but you're right. Your point is right. Fair. 27 teams have probably used it. I don't know that Arizona's used it or something like that. Teams that have never been at the top end. But, you know, and lots of teams are using it right now. Like as the Toronto Maple Leafs try to make whatever moves they make, and they won't be as dramatic, it doesn't appear as the ones the Golden Knights are in on. I mean, they're in LTI right now. I mean, they have lots of legitimate injuries on their roster, but that's the case. A huge percentage of the league is operating above the salary cap with that provision. You're right. And, you know, I think one thing I'll mention about Vegas too is if they get Hanifin signed to what would be a reasonable deal, I mean, they have Alec Martinez who's coming up as an unrestricted free agent this summer. I mean, they would essentially be just replacing him with someone, you know, younger at this stage of his career, more effective. And then they do it without even having to go into free agency. I mean, that would be, to me, that would be a masterstroke. I'm not yet sure if that's going to happen, but obviously Vegas is an attractive place to play. Noah Hanifin's agent is Pat Brisson, whose son Brendan plays for Henderson / Vegas right now. He's been up and down this season. I mean, obviously there's a lot of connections there to believe that there's at least a path to talk about a deal and maybe get an extension done. And so that's also a smart way to do business. I mean, yeah, they gave up a first round pick, but if they sign Hanifin, then you're also, you know, it's not a rental player. It's someone who can fit into your roster matrix and, you know, be a long-term player. I mean, at this rate, Vegas is never going to get bad, right? I mean, they've turned over a lot of the original roster. You know, we're down to just a couple golden misfits from the original team that went to the Cup final, but they to me look poised to be a contender for years just because of how well run they are.
Yeah. I want to go from Vegas to another Pacific Division team, the Vancouver Canucks, and specifically some reporting you did earlier this week when it comes to Elias Lindholm. You may remember he started the year as a Calgary Flame, as a pending UFA, gets shipped to Vancouver, and now there's a possibility he could change addresses again by Friday. Where are we at with Elias Lindholm and his dossier?
Well, obviously that was surprising when I first came across that knowledge and cross-reference it, put it out there. Might be my most engaged tweet ever, actually. Was that, you know, it's pretty juicy bit of intel. Yes. Because it's just not often. You do not see a player bought at the trade deadline or ahead of the trade deadline and then sold ahead of the same trade deadline. And as of Thursday morning, I still believe that to be a possibility. And there's a couple market conditions at play here that I think explain this. I mean, for one, yes, it hasn't been a perfect fit, seamless fit in the first month and a little bit for Elias Lindholm in Vancouver. You know, they've deployed him primarily as the third line center, you know, hasn't maybe had the best scoring options on his wings, hasn't been as productive as he's used to. You know, it just maybe hasn't lined up the way everyone would have hoped. And so that is part of the reason this happens. The other part is that, you know, Jim Rutherford is very aggressive. Him and Patrick Alvin, the GM in Vancouver, have a tie to Jake Guentzel. I think now that they're closer to the deadline, like maybe a scoring winger fits a little better with our roster construction. And so, you know, how would they accommodate that contract? How would they get the assets they need? you know, that opens the box to where you're like, well, maybe Lindholm is the one to move. And then the third one that shouldn't be overlooked here is there's just not a lot of centers on the market. And Boston is a team right now that badly covets another center to try to bolster themselves down the middle for a playoff run. And
they've been coveting that position for a long time.
Right. But I mean, they've seen Adam Henrique trade to Edmonton now. You know, and you just look with respect to other centers out there, there's not a lot of other players you could reasonably put into your second line slot that are available that we know to be available at this moment. And so all of that comes together to create the conditions where we might see this thing that I don't think we've ever seen before. And you know, there's a very real possibility that Elias Lindholm is flipped to Boston. You know, the Bruins will probably have to ship out some salary, maybe in that deal or another deal. It might be a three-way trade. I'm not sure of the exact machinations, but I do know that there's a lot of discussion right now happening between Boston and Vancouver about a Lindholm deal, between Vancouver and Pittsburgh about a potential Gensel deal. You know, there's some thought that Jake DeBrusk could be headed to Pittsburgh as part of this. You know, DeBrusk's file, for those that aren't up to date on it, it's not necessarily anything, you know, malicious happening here, but DeBrusk has a pending UFA. He's at an impasse with the Bruins in terms of a contract extension. He's actually seen a pretty significant dip in production this year. He had 27 goals and 50 points last year. He's got about half those totals now, and obviously in the latter stages of the season. And so perhaps to help create room, you know, the thought is he might end up in Pittsburgh, because, you know, the underlying part of this, Julian, is the Penguins, you know, as we talked about, they're not looking to strip it down to the studs. They're actually looking for, they don't have to be players. I mean, Jake DeBrusk is 27, so it doesn't necessarily have to be a player that established, but they're looking for players that are able to step into their lineup, if not this year, then next season, to you know, give a chance to rejuvenate things on the fly. And so I think that there's, you know, that could be a really fascinating kind of set of trades, because we're almost talking about hockey trades again. I mean, we got one yesterday, obviously the Casey Mittelstadt, Bo Byram deal between Colorado and Buffalo was that ilk of a trade where two teams are addressing a need with players still in the young part of their career or just entering the meat of their careers. And you know, you find a nice fit there, but you know, while there'll also be picks and prospects and things involved if this three-way or this set of deals goes down again, I'm not saying it'll necessarily go down as a three-way trade, but might be a series of trades. You know, you're really seeing players redistribute around the league to make things work. And so, you know, I think that while this deadline, unfortunately, in some ways, we've seen a lot of action on a pretty wild Wednesday with five of the top 10 names on the big board wiped away in a matter of hours there. I still think there's some real possibility for interesting moves to happen by Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern time here.
When these trades happen, a lot of people's first thoughts in Canada are, oh no, how is James Duffy going to do a show? How do insiders take it when they see the moves happen before the deadline? That's just, you know, they don't have those same fears and concerns as our friend James or David Amber for Sportsnet for that matter.
100% we don't. I mean, honestly, we're just in it. Like this has been me for the last 3 days. I'm just staring at my phone and trying to pump out info. You know, I'm sure my tweets per 60 is through the roof the last 3 days.
Oh, for sure.
Apologies for anyone who has me set up as one of where you get a notification when I tweet, because there's probably been too many. But you know, that's...
Oh no. I don't apologize for that. I'm one of those people. I appreciate when I see those tweets go up because I know something's going down.
Well, it's just a factor of the time, right? There's a lot of information flying around, a lot of text flying around. You're trying to keep a handle on the marketplace. And so, I have no trepidation. First of all, I'm not responsible for what happens. I mean, we're just trying to track the news. We don't make the news, or we don't make the trades in this case, if you know what I mean. And, you know, unfortunately for James, is he's staring down whatever it's going to be tomorrow. I mean, what is it? Like 10 straight hours of coverage, whether there's something or not. They won't come over to the Trade Breakers board too often, or my little panel back in the corner of the studio if there's not that many trades. So it's not really my problem. My problem is to try to stay on top of things along with my teammates, Darren Dreger, Pierre LeBrun, and Bobby Mack. Bobby Mack has surfaced in the TSN group chat this week. It's been
shout out Bob McKenzie.
It's been fun. He's been, I mean, he always jokes that he's the outsider now because obviously he's in retirement or semi-retirement. He's not wanting to work the phones as much as he once did, but he's still got a lot of nuggets in there. So don't sleep on the Godfather, the Bobfather, when we get to trade deadline day on Friday.
Never would sleep on the Bobfather. Yes, we still have some other names I want to get to.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Shady Rays. Get ready for the season ahead with quality shades built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. Just so happen to have a pair over here of these great Oakmont shades. You can see the black frame up top. You can see the gold trim at the bottom here. Love these. Wearing these a lot in Calgary, especially where there's a ton of sun, even in the winter months. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company offering a world-class product rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Their shades have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor adventures. They have lost and broken protection and free shipping and returns. So if you don't love your shades, exchange or return them for free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop. Exclusively for our listeners, Shady Rays is giving out its best deal of the season. Head to ShadyRays.com and use code Johnston for 50% off 2 or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Liquid IV. Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Whether it's green grape, lemon lime, or white peach, the flavors are really good and the benefits are just amazing. 1 stick plus 16 ounces of water, so much better than just drinking water on its own. No artificial sweeteners, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. It has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, and also non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Johnston at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code Johnston at liquidiv.com. On today's show, Tyler Toffoli. We kind of touched on him a little earlier, but what more are we hearing about him? Is Vancouver in his future? Are other teams sniffing in? And I also want to kind of jump off of that after Toffoli and go into New Jersey and what they could be cooking up.
Well, you know, I think let's think of Toffoli as almost, I don't want to call him a Gensel consolation prize, because some teams might actually value him above Gensel. But, you know, I do think with so many of the same teams looking for a scoring winger, you know, if Gensel goes early here, then some of those teams, whoever doesn't get him, probably double down a little bit on Toffoli. You know, there's some definite thought out there that Toffoli would be a good fit for the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, I think one of the issues in Carolina is, you know, they operate on their own way, right? They have a very specific way of doing business. It's built them a team that has won a whole pile of games the last 5 or 6 years, got them to the Eastern Conference Final last year. They've had, you know, previous series wins in the years before that. But, you know, you just wonder if they have enough scoring to get over the top and if their internal policies get in the way, because, you know, they've really been reluctant historically to trade a first-round pick for a rental. And I think ultimately that's the price that's going to need to be paid here to get Tyler Toffoli out of New Jersey. And so, you know, I don't know if Carolina steps up enough to get it done. Do they go beyond themselves? Do they make that kind of move that they haven't really done in past deadlines? I mean, I think that's one of the things to watch. You know, if Gensel ends up being traded somewhere else, you know, I could see a Toffoli going to a Vegas potentially, or going to a Vancouver. Again, if one of those teams don't end up winning the Gensel sweepstakes, if we can call it a sweepstakes, sometimes the terminology gets a little over the top. But, you know, I mean, there's obviously considerable interest in a player that scored 35 goal pace, you know, the last number of seasons as Gensel has. And Toffoli does that as well. I mean, he's on pace right now quite comfortably for a second straight 30-plus goal season at age 31. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting situation, because until a week ago, I really don't think New Jersey wanted to be in this position. I don't just mean with the playoffs or even with the coaching change. I mean, that stuff's obvious. But I don't think they want to be in a position where they were truly, you know, thinking about in a meaningful way trading Tyler Toffoli. But, you know, the interest is steady and strong enough that they have no choice, and they just haven't won enough games over the last 2 weeks in particular, and, you know, 4 months more broadly. You make the coaching change to Travis Green, and you know, really this is a pretty nice piece to sell. You know, what's interesting is I could see them buying and selling at this deadline, because I don't believe as of this hour that they've given up hope of trading for Jacob Markstrom. And, you know, we've talked about their interest in Markstrom, about the Flames' reluctance to move on from Markstrom, but, you know, we've got 30 hours, you know, to the deadline from where we sit right now. I think they're going to take at least one more run at, you know, getting a Markstrom deal done. And so perhaps, you know, and that's not a rental trade, right? That's trying to improve their goaltending in the short term, but also a player that signed 2 more years beyond now. And look, Jacob Markstrom, who has a no movement clause, is very comfortable playing in New Jersey. And so, you know, those factors, well, let's see now that Calgary is, you know, made the Hanifin deal, the Tanev deal last week, you know, obviously Lindholm and Zadora before that, do they go one step further and trade, you know, a guy that's been a Vezina quality goaltender at his best? I do think there's still some hard feelings there, as was evidenced by the media scrum you were part of last Friday. And so I don't think we can rule it out just yet. It's probably more likely that we're talking about an offseason trade with Jacob Markstrom, but there's still a chance here that he's moved before this deadline.
But even if Jacob Markstrom doesn't work out, we have also said on the show, it seems that Tom Fitzgerald is very much into looking into any other goalie. What about a guy like Linus Ullmark or any other goalie who might be available ahead of the deadline?
You know, Ullmark's an interesting one. It seems like there is some, I think there's traction in him in various places. You know, I've heard maybe even a team like Ottawa could look at him potentially. Obviously goaltending has not, you know, it's been one of the downfalls of the Senators' season. You know, I don't know how it all factors together from a Bruins end. It's not, you know, from Boston's end of these trade talks, it's not like they want to get rid of Linus Ullmark. It's that they have to move something out in order to you know, create the roster space and cap space needed to address the center position. So if the DeBrusk deal goes down, I'm not sure we see Ullmark moved at this deadline, if you know what I'm saying. But, you know, obviously the Bruins do feel like they have their goaltender of the now and future in Jeremy Swayman. They've had contract discussions about an extension for him. You know, Ullmark is signed for 1 more year after this one. And so I think that there's some value there for other teams. And so, yeah, I do think the Devils would pivot in that direction to see if they can get something done. But it's not a foregone conclusion Boston, you know, will move him. This isn't them trying to dump the player. The player in this case is an asset. And any move involving either DeBrusk or Ullmark would really just be tied to anything else that Boston's doing in terms of making an acquisition.
Okay. New Jersey, interesting spot. Vancouver in an interesting spot. What about some of the other names on the list? What about Frank Vetrano?
You know, Vetrano's an interesting case. It's not, even though he's in the top 10 on the big board, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion he's dealt. You know, Anaheim has made some trades already. The Lyubushkin deal, the Sam Carrick and Adam Henrique to Edmonton deal that went down on Wednesday. And, you know, Vedrano's got 1 more year on his contract. I think he'd even consider an extension there this summer if he isn't dealt with this deadline. And he's having a fantastic season. He was their all-star representative, which, you know, people might have got some chuckles out of. But look, he's on pace. He could get 35-plus goals this year, depending on how hot he finishes the season. And so, you know, the Rangers have certainly had interest in him, would be repatriating him, so to speak, to Broadway if they were able to get him. I think the Rangers have also been around Pavel Buchnevich, who's another player that they traded to St. Louis. So they're looking at a few familiar faces as they look to bolster their forward group at this deadline. But, you know, when it comes to Vetrano specifically, I think Anaheim is certainly open to listening and considering the options. But, you know, sort of like Buchnevich in St. Louis, you almost kind of have to compel them to act now, because they're no doubt feeling that, well, this could be an offseason trade. It could be next year's deadline trade. I mean, this doesn't have to happen from a seller's perspective. And, you know, there's quite a number of forwards, I'd say, or wingers out there on the market, not as many centers as we touched on earlier. And so, you know, ultimately the prices for some of these wingers just might not be enough to make it so those teams feel they have to trade them. So I think Vetrano, let's see what happens kind of in the next day or so here, but not a foregone conclusion he's dealt.
What about the team you cover, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Brad Treliving? What could he do ahead of his first trade deadline with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, one under-discussed aspect of the Leafs' deadline plans, I think, is that they really do want to add a forward with some sandpaper or some grit or, you know, defensive capabilities that can play in the bottom six, however you want to define that. You know, I think that that's a skill set the Leafs have identified as maybe being a little lacking in their forward group, or that they'd like to bolster in the forward group. And so, you know, I think that they will very likely bring in a depth type of forward at this deadline. You know, no surprise to you is really, it hasn't changed all year long that they have been looking for other options on the right side of the blue line that they can add. I mean, it's getting a little, you know, it's getting a little thin there in terms of the number of players available. You know, Matt Dumba is probably the most notable name that fits that profile that's on the market still at this time. You know, I don't know that he's a top target for the Leafs, but certainly if the price is right, I could see them acting and you know, making a move for him. You've got some maybe some more depth options. I look at some like Chad Ruedel in Pittsburgh. I don't know why that name. I just like all those vowels were like blending my brain there.
It's early.
But, you know, he's a depth option, but he's a right shot. I wonder if that could make sense depending on how the market goes. You know, I even think Joel Edmondson is someone certainly the Leafs have inquired upon. He doesn't solve the right shot problem. He's a lefty, but he is 6'5". He could be had very cheap against the cap because, you know, Montreal already retained salary on him when they traded him to Washington. If Washington retains again, you're talking about a very cheap acquisition on the cap, which is important to Toronto where they're at. And, you know, he's a big bruising type defensive defenseman, can give them more depth. So I think you're reasonably looking at a depth addition on the blue line and then, you know, another at forward. And you know, the Leafs just don't have the assets, unfortunately. Like they liked an Anthony Mantha, for example. They didn't have a second round pick to trade for him. You know, and there's other guys. I mean, I think even Noah Hanifin had some appeal to the Leafs, even knowing that he isn't likely or is just absolutely not going to re-sign a new contract in Canada. You know, I think that they remained around those Noah Hanifin talks until the end, but, you know, other places were better positioned to pounce. So there's still going to be some action for the Leafs. I get the sense they're really burning up the phone lines and acting with some urgency right now. But, you know, I don't think we're going to see a headline grabbing trade out of Toronto.
Anyone else available or maybe not so much available on the trade board or just kind of out there that you're keeping an eye out for in advance of Friday's deadline?
I got to look at the trade board. I'm losing track of who's even
literally
there.
Like I have it like on the side and I'm just like, all right, give me Frank Vetrano. Give me, I mean, you mentioned Jason Zucker kind of briefly earlier. Matt Dumba's also there.
Yeah. I think Zucker,
handful of names.
Zucker again is he's probably what I call plan B for a lot of the teams that are looking for a winger. You know, if they don't get Gensel or they just find the price ultimately too high on Gensel, I could see Vancouver pivoting to Zucker. I know that they've shown some interest. I know Nashville's inquired on Zucker, found the price a little high, but maybe they circle back. I mean, Nashville's an interesting team. We had them as one of the big sellers for a lot of the season. And then with this great last month they've had, you know, they're pivoting to where I don't think they're going to go too crazy, but certainly they're looking to make an addition to their forward group if they can. You know, Vegas has at least thought about Zucker again, not as a prime time target, but maybe if the Gensel thing goes a different way. And so, you know, I think that he's sort of maybe a domino piece I'll be looking at if Gensel comes off the board. And, you know, my sense I should mention too is that Pittsburgh, you know, they wanted to get Gensel done by Wednesday night. I think they really want to get it done by Thursday night. They're not looking to have this bleed into the final day of action. So, you know, maybe by the time you're listening to this pod, you're like, CJ, why are you going on and on about Gensel? We already know he's going to. But, at this point in time, I do think it's likely Gensel happens Thursday. And then obviously we sort of see where the board goes from there.
Anything about Florida? I mean, I'm still thinking about that Tarasenko trade where they didn't have to give up that much to get him. And I wonder if Florida could stand to do more.
Well, yes, Florida, I think, will look at another forward. You know, just the rich getting richer, you know, it's like,
yeah.
What do you get for someone that has everything? Well, in Florida's case, you get them another forward. I mean, they're already a pretty deep group, basically everywhere you want to look on the roster. I'll say this. I wrote a story, and it's not just to pump my work, but with Jeremy Rutherford about...
No, please pump your work.
About no move clauses and no trade clauses. I realize it's not on the surface the most sexy topic, but you know what fans might not realize, I can't remember the exact number, but there's 270, give or take, players with some degree of trade protection in their contracts in the NHL. For perspective, there is currently one player in the NBA who has a no-trade clause, Bradley Beal, and there have only been 10 no-trade clauses in the history of the NBA. In Major League Baseball, the number, and I couldn't get a firm number, but it sounds like, from best I could tell, it's anywhere from about 30 to 35 players that have no-trade protection. There's something called a 5-and-10 rule there, but also some players can negotiate no-trade clauses on the side. But you're talking about one a team in the majors, and in football, it's like less than 10. So it's a very unique aspect in hockey. If you only really follow hockey closely from a business perspective, you just think, oh, what's the big deal? Yeah, so-and-so has a no trade. But there are so many no trade clauses in the NHL, way more than any other sport. I think it's a direct, you know, and from the people Jeremy and I spoke to, I think that this is a commonly held view. It's a direct response to a hard salary cap. You know, basically in a lot of cases in the hard cap, the teams are saying to the player, well, take a little less because, you know, then we can fit in your teammate. And then he says, okay, well, if I'm taking less here, then I want to make sure I'm going to be here. And so that's how it goes. And then the other factor is once one player gets it on a roster, and then the next good player on the roster is like, well, you know, you gave it to Julian SDP. So give me a no trade. And then, you know, producer Drew's negotiating his deal. I was like, well, if you're giving it to Julian and CJ, you got to give it to me. And so I think that has been a real factor at this deadline. And the reason I went into that kind of digression is you're asking about the Tarasenko deal to Florida. Well, you know, first of all, Vladimir Tarasenko signed a one-year deal as a veteran player who didn't have other better options at the end of the summer in Ottawa, but he got a full no trade clause. So as a result of that, and look, I don't, if you negotiate in your contract, like I'm not coming down on Tarasenko here. You've earned that. You'd be damn sure that big money CJ enforces his contracts, whatever's in there. Right. So I'm certainly not hating on Tarasenko for this, but he only ended up giving Ottawa one team he wanted to be traded to, and that's Florida. And so if you're in the Senators front office, your choice is, do we keep him, pay him more money for the rest of the season, have him be here and stand on principle, or do we just make a deal for kind of pennies on the dollar? And they made a pennies on the dollar deal. But again, they were in that corner because of the decision they made in the summer. So that's why the return on Tarasenko looks so weak compared to some others. And that's a factor in a lot of else of what's going on. I mean, look, Gensel has no move protection to limited number teams. I think it's 12 off the top of my head. You know, even Hanifin, you're probably talking about a better return in a world where there's no trade language in his contract, because maybe he's, you know, Calgary's got a wider field there. Maybe they do trade him to a team like the Leafs, but because the player had some control, I think that affects things a little bit. And I should point you to Elias Lindholm. He has no trade language at all in his contract. So that's the other reason why maybe he gets dealt to Vancouver and ultimately gets flipped to a team like Boston or maybe the Rangers. We'll see if there could be a curveball thrown at us there, but it's
the Rangers.
The beauty is though, is that if, like, as an asset from a team perspective, you can just trade him anywhere. You don't need his permission. You don't need to work with him in essence. And so I do think a complicating factor that exists in the NHL, a dynamic that maybe is overlooked by the casual fan, is those trade clauses do muck things up for teams. And of course the teams themselves are at fault. They're the ones giving them out, to the degree they have. But I wonder, in the next CBA negotiations, which I don't really want to conjure memories of or thoughts of in 2026, though, I wonder if we see the league, like if the league sees this a big enough issue that they maybe make it a little harder to get a no trade clause. I mean, right now you have to have 7 years of professional service. Essentially, you have to be a tenured player to negotiate one. But maybe they, you know, the NBA has a rule. You have to be, I think, 4 years on your current team when you sign the deal to get one. So essentially you have to, you can't get one while becoming a free agent jumping to a new team. So maybe we'll see that kind of language introduced down the line.
I know we'll do a better job of going through some of the big trades post-trade deadline, but I don't want producer Drew to get mad at me. Before we wrap up here, what did you think of what Colorado did yesterday, getting Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker, moving out pieces like Bowen Byram and Ryan Johansson ahead of the deadline?
Really, really creative. You know, attaching Ryan Johansson, who, you know, was not working out for him with the Avalanche, and he's a $4 million cap hit this year and next, attaching him to the first round pick that they used to get Sean Walker is, I would say, a nice piece of business for, you know, a contender that needs that cap space. And, you know, I can tell you they made a similar offer on Chris Tanev with Calgary last week, that they were similarly looking to dump a player, you know, while trading a first rounder, and were open to bringing Tanev in. Obviously they pivoted to Sean Walker, another right shot D who fits a need, but then it also creates the opportunity to make the second deal, which, you know, was the pure hockey deal with Bo Byram, because you've acquired the defenseman that you're removing the hole that Byram fills in your lineup. And now you're acquiring the centerman that is going to take Ryan Johansson's spot as a second line center in Casey Mittelstadt. And so I think it's a real intriguing sort of series of moves by Colorado. Again, I think this is an insanely well-run front office, makes a lot of good decisions. You know, yes, you win a Stanley Cup because you have Nathan McKinnon, Kale McCarr, and Nichushkin, and everyone else who came up big that playoffs for them a couple of years ago. But you really win a Stanley Cup because you've made a whole bunch of really good decisions over time, even with some of the things that are less obvious on your roster, and that levels you up and accumulates you to the point where you can get there. And so I think the Avalanche are there again. I would tell you as well that to keep an eye on Gabriel Landeskog. You know, I know there's a lot of feeling out there from the people I talk to around the league that he's going to reappear at some point in the playoffs. Not a foregone conclusion. He's coming back from significant surgery. Hasn't played a game since lifting the cup for the Colorado Avalanche in Tampa a couple of years ago. But, you know, that's a possibility. I like that they get younger and add, you know, obviously someone they see as a potential core piece in Mittelstadt. You know, it might be lost because, you know, the Sabres are, you know, just have not achieved as a team what people wanted. But Mittelstadt really broke out last year and met a lot of the promise he had. And he's having another strong season this year. And so I really think that could be a nice pickup. You know, for Buffalo's end of that trade, which I also like, I mean, it can be one of those ones where I don't have a hot take, like one team fleeced the other. Is, no. You know, they add Bo Byram to a pretty impressive blue line already, and they're all in the same right age range. I'm talking with Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, Matthias Samuelson. Now you put Byram there. I mean, that's a pretty strong top four. Those guys are all under 25 years of age. You know, in Buffalo's case, the other three defensemen I mentioned are all signed long-term. Bo Byram, I would imagine, is part of the future there, and you'll see that kind of contract for him. But they do that. And for them, they had a big decision pending on Mittelstadt, right? I mean, he is a restricted free agent after this season, but he was in line for a big raise. And if they had some doubts about giving that to him, not even maybe because of the player, but just because of how they allocate their cap dollars, you know, I think it's smart for them to move early. I also think it's not a bad idea for Colorado because, you know, they're adding a younger piece. It's sort of like how I see Hanifin going to Vegas. He's not a young player, but Vegas is getting a younger established player in that set of deals than what they have. I mean, it allows them to sort of graduate or allow other guys to leave for nothing, and you're still getting better in the process. I really like that Avalanche Buffalo trade, and I can tell you with certainty you didn't see the names Mittelstadt or Byram on the trade board because they kept that one pretty stealth. I didn't see that one coming, but it made a whole lot of sense once it unfolded on Wednesday, and we could kind of look at it cumulatively with the other moves that were being made.
Okay, you've had yourself a very busy week, so if you want to defer your stick tap to next week, I will give you that option before we wrap up our Thursday edition of the CJ Show.
Preemptive stick tap to James Duthie, my main man, fantastic teammate at TSN, and as much as we joke about it, and honestly, we are all stealing money, like it's this is a joke, that this is a job, but being the host of a show as chaotic as Trade Deadline, 10 hours live on air, like you can't believe, you know, you're wearing these earpieces and you can hear everyone in the back talking in your ear. Like, I can't even imagine how well James does his job, but it's as much as we joke about it, it's a real, you know, accomplishment. And I think James is the best in the business. And so I will preemptively give him a stick tap because I know he's going to knock it out of the park on Friday hosting our show at Trade Center.
Man, just a legend in the game, and I think that's a really good call, Siege. I'll give it to Sasha Barkov, who had himself a sweet assist earlier this week against the New York Rangers. Might be the best assist of the season. Well, right up there with one of the best plays of the season, one of the best assists of the season, but I am not a man made of stone. I will give my stick tap to Sasha Barkov for that. What a great play from earlier this week.
Oh, yeah, there's hockey games going on these days.
Yeah. We got into none of that. There have been games going on, actual great plays happening, chases for wild cards and playoff spots. Yeah, They're all in the background to the NHL trade deadline.
So literally the last funny two nights where we've had, you know, action going on, I've had games on as I would normally at home, but like I've caught like a third at best of the action because I'm living in my phone and stuff's happening. And so I've kept a reasonable pulse on the league, but I definitely feel like I'm in a deficit in terms of watching games this week.
I basically spent last night just refreshing my Twitter feed and just waiting to see what you were going to say or what any sources would get back to me or just anything with Noah Hanifin. So I was very much in tunnel vision for the last like 12 hours or so.
I mean, that's okay. We got lots of times to focus in on the ramp up to the playoffs as soon as we get to Saturday.
Yeah. Good luck to you as well on TSN Trade Center, sitting by the trade breakers desk and hopefully breaking a ton of more trades on Friday's show.
Man. We might get a post deadline CJ and sunglasses because I feel a little strung out right now just from like not sleeping, staring too much time on the screen time. So I might need to have the sunglasses on by the next time we record an episode, pal.
I can't wait for that episode when it comes time for that. And if you haven't already done so, you should subscribe to our podcast, whether on Spotify or Apple or on the SDPN YouTube page, so you can potentially see that episode of CJ bringing back the sunglasses.
Putting on the Shady Rays, brother.
Yes, sir. That's it. Shout out Shady Rays, our sponsor for the podcast right now. I hope to see that pair. I can't wait to see what you got from Shady Rays.
I ordered two pairs.
You ordered two? You could do that?
I mean, my name's on the show, bud.
Okay, look, I got to have a conversation with a couple people already. Anyways, we'll be back with a post-trade deadline show as promised. And again, subscribe to the podcast. And get your questions in. You might as well get your questions in now for Monday's Ask CJ, because why not? We'll try to tackle as many as we can. For CJ, I'm Julian. Peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JK and McKenzie.